Okay, it's 7:10. I'm calling this meeting of San Leandro City Council to order. Today is Monday, May 5th, and I do want to express my appreciation for members of the audience. We had a very extensive closed session meeting that lasted for 2 hours, and we managed to just get here a few minutes late. So thank you for your patience. With that, I will call on the city clerk to call roll.
Thank you, Mayor. Councilmember Aguilar.
Present.
Councilmember Azevedo.
Present.
Councilmember Bolt.
Present.
Councilmember Simon.
Present.
Councilmember Viveros Walton.
Present.
Vice Mayor Bowen.
Present.
Mayor Gonzalez.
Present.
Please note all members are present.
I'll lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance. Please stand if you're able to.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, the City of San Leandro conducts orderly meetings to fulfill its mandate. Discriminatory statements and conduct or conduct that would potentially violate the Federal Civil Rights Act of 1964 and or the California Fair Employment and Housing Act, the California Penal Code Sections 403 or 415 are per se disruptive to meeting and will not be tolerated. Please see the City Council Handbook and City Council Meeting Rules of Decorum for additional information. Madam Clerk, your announcement.
Thank you, Mayor. If you would like to make a public comment during the meeting, you can do so in person or via Zoom. If you are present at the meeting, please complete a speaker card and submit it to the city clerk before the item is presented. If you wish to participate in public comment via Zoom, you can use the raise your hand tool when the item is called. During the public comment session, speakers will be invited to speak and will have a set time to share their comments. A countdown timer will appear for their convenience, and when the time is up, the microphone will be muted. All raised hands outside of public comment will be lowered to avoid confusion. Once public comment is opened, hands may be raised to speak. There will be a 30-minute window for public comments, which will take place under item 7, public comments, as per the published agenda. After this time is up, the council will proceed with the rest of the meeting's agenda. If you have not had the opportunity to speak during the initial 30-minute period, there will be another chance to do so after item 12, city council reports. Thank you.
So for item 3, is there any report on closed session action taken?
Thank you, Mayor. No reportable actions were taken in closed session, but direction was provided to staff.
At this point in time, we'll move to item 4, recognitions. And we're going to start with a declaration on Asian American, I think it's Native Hawaiian and Pacific Islander Heritage Month here in the city of San Leandro. We'll start with June Lee, Executive Director of the Korean Community Center of the East Bay. Come on up and I'll join you. After which, we will do a declaration for Mental Health Awareness Month. How are you? Welcome to City Hall. And this is for you. So for those that don't know, the Korean Center, the East Bay's mission activity, I'm going to definitely give you a little bit of time to chat. We're glad to have them here in San Leandro. I think it's on Callan Street, if I'm not mistaken, in downtown San Leandro. And so you've led significant growth at KC, was it EEB? KCCEB. So thank you for all that you do. But let's celebrate the full breadth of the Heritage Month. So whereas Asian Americans, Native Hawaiians, and Pacific Islanders, that Heritage Month is a month to celebrate and pay tribute to the contributions of the AAPI community to American history, society, and culture. And whereas President Obama issued the proclamation 8369 proclaiming May 2009 as Asian American Pacific Islander Heritage Month, and whereas Asian Americans and Pacific Islanders comprise many different ethnicities and languages, and their many achievements embody the American experience, and whereas Asian Americans, Pacific Islanders, including Native Hawaiians, are leaders in all aspects of American life, including government and industry, science and medicine, the arts and the armed forces, education and sports, and so much more. And whereas the San Leandro community has greatly benefited through cultural richness, the diversity and the generosity of local Asian Americans and Pacific Islanders, and celebrates their contribution through various public programs and events each year. Now, therefore, I, Juan Gonzalez III, Mayor of the City of San Leandro, do hereby proclaim May 2025 as Asian American and Pacific Islander Heritage Month here in the City of San Leandro, and call upon all residents and community members too, all of y'all. I call upon you to actively appreciate and to celebrate both our AAPI neighbors and more broadly, the cultural and heritage and the celebration of the AAPI community. Agreed?
Yes, absolutely.
Agreed? Agreed? Okay, that's good.
Oh, thank you very much. Such an honor to receive this recognition, Mayor. And then, you know, as a member of the Asian American, very long, Native Hawaiian Pacific Islander community, which represent more than 50 languages, a big diversity, as a very strongly contributing citizens to the society and economy of the United States. I'm so honored to be here, represent the community, and thank you very much.
One picture for Mr. Simon. Please, our picture quick, and then we'll turn this way here. Okay, so now Mental Health Awareness Month. Thank you very much. So we've got Tejesi Belgi. Did I say that correct? Bilgi with a hard G. Thank you. Come on up. You are representing La Familia. So La Familia is a nonprofit that for, I think, 50 years now, right? 50 years now? Has been celebrating with us. Come on up, come on up, come on up. Are you on my list too? But doesn't matter to me. Just come on up. Well, this is all about celebrating.
Jennifer Ellis.
Okay. So who wants to roll it? Hi, Jennifer. How are you?
It's good to see you.
Jennifer Ellis. Perfect. Okay. So we're going to read through this. We're going to celebrate or recognize, I think is a better way to say, recognize Mental Health Awareness Month, and then give you the mic to say a few things. Okay. So whereas mental health is essential to our overall health, well-being, and the importance of attending to it has become even more pronounced over the last 5 years. And whereas nearly 58 million Americans live with some form of mental illness, where they experience anxiety, depression, schizophrenia, bipolar disorder, PTSD, or other forms of mental illness. And whereas many people with mental illnesses may not know how to access the services, the resources that they need, and whereas the stigma and the fear of discrimination keeps many people who would benefit from these services from even seeking help. And whereas the City of San Leandro supports efforts to address mental health and the emotional well-being of all individuals and at-risk populations and favors legislation to strengthen such support. Now, therefore, I, Juan Gonzalez III, Mayor of the City of San Leandro, do hereby proclaim the month of May 2025, as Mental Health Awareness Month in San Leandro, and call upon our community. Again, who is that? That's you. And all of you people online, calling upon you to increase awareness and understanding of mental illness, to reduce the stigma and to reduce the discrimination towards those experiencing mental illness, and to promote appropriate services and accessibility to those services for people with mental illness. Agreed?
Agreed.
Agreed? Agreed. That's the way it should be. So who wants to talk? Okay, there we go.
Thank you so much. And thank you so much to the whole council. We are so grateful. We're delighted to be here. We are a local San Leandro partner. We recently opened up a new facility here and we're really proud of it. What I really love about this proclamation is that it is inclusive, right? So many of us have been there, right? When there's a grief or a loss or something doesn't go the way that you expected. And so that is true for all of our community members and all of our neighbors. And it's really a continuum. And so some people feel like they just need more support. And when they are met with stigma, it's really unfortunate. And so I'm just so grateful that the city of San Leandro and the La Familia are opening our hearts to people who are in those times of needing extra support. So thank you for this. And I hope that we all have a really blessed Mental Health Awareness Month.
I want to thank you guys specifically. Go ahead and give them some applause. I want to highlight specifically the respite home that's been open here in San Leandro. Right, that opportunity for people to get away for a few days when they feel themselves about to enter a place of crisis, to say there is a safe space with peers, people that have gone through the same thing on the same journey. So that's why I'm particularly honored to have you guys here today. Okay. So somebody, here comes Mr. Siner. Thank you, sir. Okay, so with that, we will go to our consent calendar, item number 5 on our agenda. Are there any items that a council member would like to pull? Council member Aguilar.
I'd like to move the consent calendar.
Got a motion from Aguilar to move the consent calendar. Council member Acevedo.
Yeah, I'd like to second it.
With a second from council member Acevedo. At this point in time, I'll go to public comment on this item.
Mr. Mayor, we have one hand up online and no public comments in person.
Okay, please proceed online.
Lucas, you may unmute yourself.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Thank you. Thank you for taking my comment. I wanted to call in and make, the standard comment that I make about budget adjustments and contract adjustments appearing on the consent calendar without a lot of discussion. I'm sure you guys discussed this in other forums, but not with the public. And I just want to draw attention to item 5A, attachment B, which talks about the scope of services and compensation. And in that attachment, there is a line item. It's just a single page attachment, not too hard to read for the public, but it's a single line item that talks about the costs of this adjustment. And one of the costs is project management through June 2025. That's the end of next month. Staff meetings and team coordination. And that one line item is costed at $6,680. Now, let's say these meetings happen once a week for the next 8 weeks. That's about $850 per meeting. I've been in a lot of meetings. Most of them take 30 minutes to 1 hour. Maybe they take 2 hours. It's about $400, $500, $800 per hour. Do we really need to pay that much for a meeting? I don't know. I don't know what a lot of the other items on this page are, but looking at things I do recognize, like product management and staff meetings, the prices seem unusual. Maybe if you're meeting with these people every day for 3 hours a day, the prices make sense, but this is a lot. Thank you for taking my comment, and please steward the people's money responsibly.
Thank you. Mr. Mayor, there is no more public comment.
Okay, so we'll close public comment and come back to our council members for further discussion. Seeing none, let's vote, please.
All votes are in. Motion passes unanimous, 7-0.
Okay, for item 6, do we have reports today from city manager or city attorney?
Yes. Yes, Mr. Mayor, thank you. Good evening, council members and community members. As an effort to meet the city council quality of life priority, the library will be hosting a basic AI course, AI for Curious Minds, May 8th from 6 to 7 p.m. Participants will learn basics to use AI from storytelling, drawing, conversation, and more. The course is free and registration is required by calling the library at 510-577-3971. I'd also like to announce that this week marks the celebration of National Small Business Week 2025. a time to recognize the vital contributions small businesses make to our local economy and community. The Chamber of Commerce, with the support of the city, is leading the charge with a series of free seminars covering topics such as artificial intelligence, cybersecurity, public contracting, managing cash flow, and obtaining funding, and the always popular interactive QuickBooks workshop. If you are a San Leandro business, I highly recommend you take advantage of the free opportunity to gain helpful and relevant knowledge. Visit sanleandrochamber.com to learn more and to register. That concludes my announcement, Mayor.
Perfect. Thank you. I think the first of those happened today, if I'm not mistaken, at noontime. So let's go to our next item, item number 7 on the agenda, public comment. So it's time for the public comment on items that are not on our agenda. Things that are on the agenda, comment will be taken at the correct spot in the agenda. So for items not on the agenda, do we have speakers?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. We have no public comment online or in person this evening.
I will close public comment and move to item number 8, our public hearing. Our first public hearing, 8A, is whether we adopt a resolution to amend Title 6, Chapter 4 of the San Leandro Administrative Code, amending fees and charges for wastewater discharge for fiscal years 2026 through 2030. We've got staff to present, and I believe we've got Water Pollution Control Manager Hayes Morehouse. There you are. Welcome. And if you can move that mic over towards you, it's very flexible. Just keep moving it.
All right. Is that good? So, thank you, Mayor and City Council. My name is Hayes Morehouse. As you said, I'm the Water Pollution Control Manager here at the City of San Leandro. I have a short presentation. We did a longer presentation back in April when we first started this process. And excuse me. Oh, I won. That's not my presentation. I've got it on mine. I wanted to give you a quick overview of how we got to this point. Back in spring of 2024, so over a year ago, we decided we needed to analyze our capital needs to support the water pollution control plant, which is our biggest asset, as well as the collection system, the sewer collection system that brings the wastewater from the city residences and businesses to the treatment plant. So we analyzed those things in spring of 2024, and then last fall we commissioned a rate study, and we presented the rate study to the Finance Committee meeting in January, and then we brought it back to council at the City Council meeting in March 3rd. On March 17th, we sent public notices, the Prop 218 notices that are required through the Prop 218 process, to all of the property owners in the city. Then we had our 45-day protest period as required by Proposition 218, followed by the public hearing, which is today. So, and then if we decide to go forward, then the rates would be effective on July 1st, 2025. So the rate study objectives, the first and primary objective is the financial sufficiency. We need to fund all the costs while maintaining prudent reserves. The other objective is to make sure that we have legal compliance with Proposition 218, which means the rates don't exceed the cost of service and the rates are proportional, meaning people are paying proportionally towards the use that they make of the system. So there are some financial drivers for the increase. The primary one is aging infrastructure and capital improvement needs. Our sewer system is in need of upgrades, repairs, and replacements needed to maintain the safe and reliable operation of the system. And we've identified approximately $55 million over the next 5 years for capital improvement. Another big reason is the nutrient optimization project for new regulatory compliance. So the Water Board has told all wastewater treatment plants in the Bay Area that they need to remove nitrogen from their discharge. And we currently have allocated $10 million for this project over the next 5 years. We also have debt service from the plant upgrade and other projects. And we need to make sure that we cover our costs in terms of inflation and maintain prudent reserves. So these are the rates that we are proposing. They start out at approximately 8% for the first year, and it may vary some between different types of users, because the first step is to rebalance them and make sure that they're proportional across all user types. And then from years two through five, there will be 9% per year. So a quick summary, the city has historically provided good financial stewardship for the wastewater operations, leaving the sewer enterprise fund in good shape currently. The rate increases are needed to support the rising operating costs, the debt service from prior expenses, and upcoming capital needs. We also updated the commercial rate structure to better reflect industry norms, and the proposed rates updated to reflect the cost of service to each customer class.
That's a wrap.
Wrap.
Perfect. So I will come to council members, see if there's any questions before I open the public hearing for Mr. Morehouse. I know that we have talked about this in various settings, but this is yet another chance to ask any final questions that you might have. Okay, so seeing none, what I'm going to do is I'm going to open the public hearing. It's 7:32. If you would like to address the city council on this item, please approach the microphone. Do we have any speakers?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. We have one speaker online and no speaker cards in person.
Let us continue online, please.
John Monroe, you may unmute yourself.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
All right, thank you. Good evening, Mayor Juan and all city council members. My name is John Hernandez Monroy, and I'm a resident of San Leandro High School, San Leandro, currently attending San Leandro High. I'm online right here tonight because I'm concerned about the continued sale of widespread use of tobacco products, particularly
e-cigarettes. I need you to hold on a second.
All right, sorry.
No, that's not a problem. We're in the middle of a public hearing, which is focused specifically on the wastewater rates that are being proposed for the next 5 years. Mm-hmm. If you would like to comment on items that are not on our agenda, that time has passed, but I would encourage you to come back on this very topic in 2 weeks.
All right.
May 19th. And then just kind of join us at the beginning of the meeting. And at item number 7, please speak. Okay?
Sorry.
Thank you so much. Let us proceed. Any others?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. We have no public comment.
Okay, so it's 7:33, and I'm closing the public hearing on this item. Madam Clerk, I am curious. I know that you sent out approximately 14,000 some odd notifications. What have we learned?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Mayor. The city sent out 14,589 notices, and we needed to receive 7,295 protests back. And so far, the city has received 151 protest letters.
Perfect. So at this point in time, is there any additional questions or comments from city council members? Councilmember Bolt.
Yeah. Could you explain that? How we got to the 14? Like, why was it only 14,000? Can you explain that to us and why it wasn't the whole city?
I cannot explain that, but I believe Hayes can explain that.
14,000, approximately the number she said, is the number of parcels in the San Leandro sewer district.
So it went to 14,000 homeowners or business owners or whoever owned each parcel.
Yeah, so I'm just going to jump in there because I want to make sure that the language is really clear. Because this is assessed on a property, the individual who has noticed is the property owner.
Got it.
And it's also specifically for the portion of San Leandro that is served by San Leandro Sewer.
Perfect. That helps me because I was asked that question and I didn't know why. So thank you.
Seeing no other, I will accept a motion at this time. Councilmember Bolt.
I make a motion to pass.
To adopt the resolution?
Yep.
Okay, I've got a motion to adopt the resolution. Councilmember Azevedo.
Yes, I'd like to second it.
Okay, so I've got a motion by Bolt, second by Azevedo on this motion. Seeing no further discussion, this is to adopt the resolution presented. Please vote.
All votes are in. Motion passes unanimous, 7-0.
At this point in time, we are going to move to item 8B. So for this item, we will have council receive support from outside legal counsel. We've got Ms. Valerie Argento, if I remember the name correctly, will be coming up here. And while we're making that change, I do want to just identify a couple of things, raise a couple of topics for consideration. This involves a hearing, which will be an appeal process for a decision made by the San Leandro Planning Commission. We will hear during this block of time, we will hear from the appellant. We will hear from city staff. There will be an opportunity for the appellant to rebut. So there'll be, each party will have some time to speak. We will also hear from the public, if there are folks from the public that want to speak on this item during the public hearing. In the middle of that, we will also have questions. We will make sure that the questions that we ask as council members are specifically for the appeal process. And our counsel, our attorney, will make sure that we stay within those bounds because we can stray. We don't want to stray. We want to make sure that we stay legally correct. And as we do that, the other thing that I'd like to make sure that we do is that we may have had in this process some ex parte communications. So this would be an opportunity for council members to disclose that they've had ex parte communications with either the appellant or members of the city about this. So I'm going to start with Councilmember Bolt.
Yes, thank you. I've had ex parte communication with the applicant and the applicant reps and also the appellant Carpenters Union, 713.
Thank you. Any others? Councilmember Simon, please.
I've had ex parte communication with the applicant.
Thank you. Councilmember Azevedo.
Yes, I had ex parte with the applicant also a couple weeks ago.
Thank you. Councilmember Vivetos-Walton.
I took a meeting with everyone who requested it, which at this point was only the applicant.
Councilmember Aguilar, please.
Thank you, Mayor. I've had ex parte communication with the applicant, trying to schedule the meeting, but was unable to do so.
I'm sorry, I want to be really clear on that part. So you attempted to have, but did not have, or?
Attempted to have, but communicated via email.
Perfect, thank you. And then Vice Mayor, please.
I also had an ex parte communication with the applicant.
Okay, and then for myself, I had communications with those that reached out to me, and the only party that reached out to me was the applicant. So with those disclosures, let us proceed. So at this point in time, I think we're gonna have a, I have in my notes that it is a presentation by planning manager Waylon Lee, and I don't know if we're gonna pivot or adjust, but I'll pass it to Waylon first and then let him allot appropriately.
Senior Planner Cindy Lamero will present on behalf of staff.
Thank you.
Thank you. Good evening, Mayor and Council members. Tonight, staff is asking you to consider the appeal of the Planning Commission's decision to certify an EIR and to approve an administrative site plan review, conditional use permit, administrative exception for height for a proposed industrial building at 880 Doolittle Drive. The 14.4-acre site is northeast of the intersection of Doolittle Drive and Davis Street and is zoned IG, Industrial General. The proposed project is a 50-foot-tall, 573,000-square-foot industrial building with 15,000 square feet of office space, 64 loading docks, and 59 tractor-trailer parking spaces. A tenant has not yet been identified for this project. The conditional use permit would allow warehouse storage and wholesale retail distribution. Most building functions would be electric, and natural gas would be plumbed to the site for industrial processes only. The site is the former location of Expresso Parking, which used to serve the airport. It has two main buildings and a surface parking lot. The site is less than a mile from the end of the Northfield runways at Oakland International Airport, and it also has very good access to truck routes and to the airport and to the Port of Oakland. As proposed, the project complies with all applicable zoning regulations. And you can see this here. An EIR was prepared and circulated in 2024. Comments were received from 7 organizations, and these were addressed in the final EIR. The Bay Area Air Quality Management District's guidance requires that the use of natural gas be considered a significant impact that cannot be fully mitigated, and the proposal includes a natural gas line, which may or may not be used depending upon the tenant that is ultimately secured. The only potential environmental impact in the environmental impact report that hasn't been mitigated to a less than significant level is greenhouse gas emissions from that proposed natural gas line. As a mitigation measure, natural gas use, should it occur, would be limited to industrial processes. Everything else in the building will be electric. The lighting, the various, obviously the equipment and the kitchen and whatnot. All the other topic areas in the IR have been mitigated to a less than significant level or require no mitigation. The draft EIR documents potential project effects, and the final EIR responds to comments. The purpose of an EIR is not to be exhaustive, but to provide enough information for the agency to make an informed decision. The agency's responsibility is to minimize environmental harm while balancing competing public objectives. The city received 2 appeals of the Planning Commission's decisions. These were from Mitchell M. Tsai Law Offices on behalf of Carpenters Local 713, and from Advocates for the Environment, which withdrew its appeal today, received that email this morning from them. The appellant claims that their comments on the EIR were not adequately addressed and more mitigation measures are feasible. All comments on the draft EIR were thoroughly addressed in the final EIR. Attachment H in your packet indicates where in the final EIR those responses to comments on the draft environmental impact report can be found. At its February 6 meeting, the Planning Commission made all the required findings to approve the administrative site plan review, conditional use permit, and administrative exception. The appeal does not raise issues that would result in City Council granting the appeal and overturning the decision of the Planning Commission. Staff recommends City Council adopt a resolution certifying an environmental impact report, adopting findings, a statement of overriding considerations, and a mitigation monitoring and reporting program, and adopting a resolution rejecting the appeal and affirming the decision of the Planning Commission to approve a conditional use permit, administrative site plan review, and administrative exception for height to build a new warehouse distribution building at 880 Doolittle Drive. That concludes my presentation. Jenna Garcia from Prologis will give the presentation for that organization. Staff and George Dix from Rincon Consulting are here and available to answer any questions you might have following the presentations. Who's this guy? And we'll. There we go.
Good evening, Council Members. Janet Galvez, Investment Officer for Prologis Bay Area. I'm here today with my team sitting behind me, Matthew Sims and Claudia Tarpin. You know, Cindy did an awesome job explaining the project and giving you an overview of the project, so I won't bore you with repetition. But I do want to thank you for your time tonight, and I want to thank you for taking the time to speak with us about our project in prior meetings. I want to emphasize how great it is to work with your city staff. It's second to none. They make themselves available anytime we have a question and they move projects along. Again, we can't emphasize how much as a local developer, we appreciate their time and quickness to respond to all our matters. For those of you who don't know Prologis, we're a global company and sustainability is part of our DNA. We're primarily an industrial developer, owner, and operator, and we have ambitious goals for ourselves, like reaching net zero emission for operations by 2030. That's 10 years ahead of the Paris Agreement and ahead of our competition. Because we have so many rooftops in San Leandro and the Bay Area and globally, we partner with local agencies such as Ava Community to bring clean energy to California communities. Currently, we have 5 projects under development with Ava Communities in San Leandro, Oakland, Hayward, and Tracy. And we hope to add more to those projects over the next couple of years, as long as the local municipalities and local infrastructure companies can support it. What that means is we implement solar projects on existing rooftops and then offer that 100% renewable energy to low communities, to low income communities at a 20% discount on their utility bills. And again, we have goals to keep increasing that pipeline as long as the infrastructure can support it. Sorry, I'm on the wrong slide. Also an update regarding advocates of the environment, like Cindy mentioned, they withdrew their appeal on the project this morning due to our ability to negotiate with them and come to an agreement which made both parties satisfied with our ability to reduce our greenhouse gas emissions to a level that's satisfactory for advocates for the community. We work with them across California, and on all our new ground-up development projects, we've been able to reach those agreements with them that have satisfied their concerns for greenhouse gas emissions for new development. Following February's Planning Commission, we listened to suggestions from planning commissioners around local hiring. We always want to provide the highest quality development project for each community that we develop in. Therefore, after listening to feedback on that February Planning Commission, we're excited to use this project, 880 Doolittle, as a test case. We are eager to track how our construction labor can better benefit the communities in which we operate. On 880 Doolittle, we will identify where our labor originates and we'll prioritize hiring businesses established in San Leandro, firstly, and Alameda County. Again, that's gonna be a first of its kind. We've never done that, but we're willing to commit and do that for the first time at 880 Doolittle. Our target of this for this local hire initiative is 25% local hire campaign, focusing again first on San Leandro-based employees. We've done this before, but I'm excited to, we have never done this before, but we're excited to test this concept out in San Leandro. We also received several questions and concerns about installation of a new gas line, as noted by Cindy. So I'd like to clear that up here today. Please note we're not proactively installing a new gas line day one on this project. We will only install a new gas line if we get a manufacturing user, advanced manufacturing user that requires that gas line. And why we opted to do that is to align with San Leandro's long-term business plan, which is to turn into an advanced manufacturing community. If this was purely strictly an industrial warehouse use, we would not need a gas line. Warehouse users do not need new gas. So therefore, we are opting for the ability and flexibility to install that should a customer need it. And our conditions of approval for the project with the city strictly prohibit new gas line unless it's for a manufacturing use. Lastly, there was also a lot of construction labor discussions at Planning Commission. Therefore, we wanted to be intentional about sharing the union component of our last two San Leandro projects. We recently completed 1919 Williams, which you see on the screen right now, in December of 2024. That was a build-to-suit facility for Torani, whose headquarters here in San Leandro and growing at a fast pace. That job was 88% union labor. We also recently completed a speculative development at 3045 Doolittle as of December 2024. That project did not go in front of Planning Commission or City Council. It was a by right rehab project, and we completed that project with 99% union labor. 880 Doolittle is currently in the conceptual stages. We don't have.
Thank you. Our time is up.
So at this point in time, what we're going to do is we're going to take questions of the applicant. This will be your time to ask questions. There won't be questions later. I want you to think about your questions. Right. Take those questions. We'll answer those questions, and then we will move on to the appellant. Beginning with Councilmember Bolt.
Yes, thank you. I just want to go back to something that you brought up, the five projects where you're putting on the solar on top. What is the benefit to Prologis in that?
It helps us reach our net zero goals by 2030. We also get to provide renewable energy to our customers who use that power during the day and ultimately deploy it to the communities in the evening when our buildings are not in operation.
I love how you're putting yourself in the middle of the community in that, because in fact, it's more about the community than it is about Prologis. It's not like you guys are getting energy cheaper or anything like that. What you're doing is you're providing energy at a cheaper rate to the local community. So I wanted to commend you on that. I think you blew by it and not enough highlights were shined on that. So that's it.
Thank you. 3 minutes was tough.
Yes, I get it.
Councilmember Azevedo, please.
Yes, thank you for your presentation. I have a question for you also. Okay, all three projects on here, two of them, 1919 is 88% union, 1345 is 99% union. Why is the 880 Doolittle only forecast at 68%?
So because we're only in the conceptual stage, given that it's only, Planning Commission, we don't have fully developed construction documents. We don't have a GC identified. That's a conservative assumption. We want to aim to over-deliver. So our goal is that we end up closer to the other two, but I don't want to over-promise. I'd rather over-deliver.
That's great that we're going local hire, local businesses. Yeah, that's good. Thank you.
Any other questions at this time? There will not be an opportunity later after the appellant comes forward to ask questions. So think about the questions that you want to ask. Now is the time. Okay, seeing no more questions, we will close the questioning by counsel of the applicant, and we will move on to the appellant's opportunity to present. Let's see. Let me check my agenda. If you're the appellant, please go ahead and come on up. Let me see. Where's the appellant? Who is speaking for the appellant today? We've got Jeremy Hurwit, the attorney. Who's speaking for the appellant? This is going to be like a second, a third chance, because I just want to make sure before I move on from this 10 minutes that there's no confusion about the opportunity. Is there someone online who's raising a hand who is representing the appellant? No? Okay. So the appellant going once, going twice, going three times, no appellant showed up. So with that, I will close that opportunity for the appellant to speak. So then we will move on to the public hearing part of this, where we hear from the public. We have public comment. So at this point in time, it is 7:54, and I am opening the public hearing on this item.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. We have two public comments online and five in person. Would you like to go online first?
Let's go online first, please.
Thank you. Ginny Madsen, you may unmute yourself.
So this is Ginny Madsen, and I did not know about this until now, but what I'm really surprised about is all the greenhouse gas mitigation and discussion is about the building, but there are going to be 60 more semis coming down to through an impacted artery from Davis to Doolittle off of the freeway. It's going to make getting into Costco on garbage days really difficult. That is where the greenhouse emissions are going to come from. And I just had to say that. So thanks for letting me.
Thank you. Lucas, you may unmute yourself.
Thank you. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Thank you. I originally had hoped that the appellant would attend the meeting and read some of the important portions of their 300-page submission to the city. I draw the council's attention to Appendix C, appeals of the Planning Commission decision compressed. And if it's compressed at 300 pages, I can only imagine what the full submission looked like. But I want to say that I think I agree with a lot of the items in their submission. I would point the city council specifically to pages 3, 4, and 5, where they talk about the specific things that could have been done, that could have been required. The city's requirement that appliances inside of the building are electric, I mean, that's inadequate. I don't, what are they going to have, like a stove and a lamp in there? Sure, but this is an industrial facility. There need to be significant mitigation measures here. And the city, I think, said, or the Planning Commission says, you know, some of these things can't be mitigated. Well, there's mitigation and then there's offsets. And I'm surprised that we don't require, there's like many documents I searched as well as I could for offsets. Why don't we require this developer or whatever company ends up renting this space to purchase a carbon offset in the equivalent amount of whatever it is that they're going to produce through the facility? Why are there no solar panel requirements on the roof of this building? Why are there no solar panel requirements above the parking spaces? Why are there no requirements for electric vehicles to be used on the property, both the industrial vehicles and any vehicle charging stations? There's not a lot happening here. And I agree with the comment made by Ginny Madison. Thank you for taking my comment.
Thank you. Mr. Mayor, there is no more public comment online, so we will go in person.
So I just want to hold for just a second. I want to make positive that everyone online has their chance. I'm going to double check. Anybody online want to make a comment? Okay, seeing none, we will close the hearing for online participants and bring the hearing participation here into our chambers.
Okay, thank you. First, I will call Ruhama Toreda.
Good evening. My name is Ruhama Toretta here on behalf of Carpenters Local 713, representing workers throughout Alameda County, including those that live and work around the proposed 880 Doolittle Industrial Project. We'd like to draw your attention to several ways in which the project's EIR fails to properly account for the environmental impacts of this project, which ultimately could put the people who work on and live around this project at risk. Overall, we advocate that this project benefit the local community, which also reduces negative environmental impacts of construction. The city should require the project to be built with contractors that will hire locally, pay prevailing wages, and utilize apprentices from state-certified apprenticeship training programs. We would also like to draw your attention to specific parts of the EIR with insufficient analysis. First, energy use impacts do not go far enough. The EIR relies on anticipated regulatory compliance to conclude that the project's energy use impacts would be less than significant, but does not provide analysis of how regulatory compliance would reduce the impact to less than significant levels. Second, this project's greenhouse gas emissions are not adequately mitigated. The EIR finds that the project will have significant and unavoidable impacts on greenhouse gas emissions, and the city can and should do more to mitigate these impacts. Third, this project does not fully analyze and support noise and vibration mitigation measures. Further study is required to demonstrate that the proposed mitigation will prevent negative structural impacts from occurring on neighboring structures. We ask the City Council to grant Local 713's appeal of the Planning Commission's approvals for this project because the EIR is deficient and does not meet the threshold to be certified. We ask for this project's EIR to be revised and recirculated to ensure that San Leandro residents and workers are protected. Thank you.
Thank you. John Dalrymple.
My name's John Dalrymple. I am a San Leandro resident and a very happy one. So part of my, I work with the electricians, plumbers, sprinkler fitters, iron workers, sheet metal workers who will be building this project. And I have the pleasure, you know, to do that. And my, what my job does is I look at almost every industrial project of this size throughout maybe 20 counties. And if there's not an industrial builder I don't know about, probably haven't met with. And I've worked with groups like the Sierra Club and other environmental groups to look at what are the best practices to ensure that our communities are, that these are, in, are they can be built and the right mitigations are done. In particular, the mitigations impacting the work of the construction workforce of great concern to ours. I could tell you that, so for example, I helped with, you know, the Stockton's Industrial Safety Ordinance that got passed last year. And many others. So I could tell you that as a Prologis, as an industrial leader, there has been no firm that we have found that steps up to the plate like they do on trying to address the impacts and other in the rest of the industry looks up to them and figures, well, okay, this is the bar we have to reach to if we're gonna build our projects. And I don't say that lightly. You know, I used to be head of the Central Labor Council in Contra Costa, where we had big fights with refineries. I helped do the refinery safety ordinance there. So they had to prove themselves to us, and they have. This is CEQA compliant. We're confident about the mitigations. We think it's this is exactly the kind of project, particularly when it comes to manufacturing, that we need in the city to create the kind of revenue that's necessary to support the services that I enjoy as a resident. So I urge you to reject the appeal and to approve this project and welcome Prologis once again into the city with a great project. Thank you.
Thank you. Bill Bai.
Good evening, mayors and city members. And my name is Bill Bai, and I'm a San Andrew resident and a proud member of local UA Local 342. And San Andrew is a great city for working families for a lot of reasons. I want to thank the city council and the mayor for all the work you do and to make it that way. One more thing you can do is improve this project. And it takes a lot of money to provide the city services like our great parks, our libraries, along with our police and fire departments. This project will take a rundown site and turn it into something that will pump money into the city's budget and to pay for those services. It will send the message to other companies that San Andrew is a place to bring your business to. Along with this business come good paying jobs. I appreciate the fact this developer has committed to use our union members and other union members too to build their projects. I spend my paycheck at Safeway, Costco, and Chinese restaurant here in the town. So that commitment to use the local construction workforce will result in millions in construction wages and being spent in those stores and their small and large local business. This is the right project in the right location. Please support it. Thank you.
Thank you. Brandon Evans.
Good evening, Mayor Gonzalez and esteemed City Council members. My name is Brandon Evans. I'm a business representative for the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, Local 595. I'm here tonight representing a few hundred San Leandro households who are members of my union and those families that make their living as electricians, sheet metal workers, UA Local 342, sprinkler fitters, Local 43, and iron workers, Local 378. I'm speaking as an advocate for high quality union construction being built by local construction workforces who are being paid family-supporting wages. I'm also speaking as someone who has been entrusted to advocate for the general welfare of our members who live here in San Leandro. I'm here in support of the industrial project at 880 Doolittle. And can the members in the audience who are from the trades and support this project please stand? Thank you. Prologis understands the importance of protecting the environment. And this project aligns with those goals. Prologis, under DTSC supervision, is actively addressing groundwater contamination from the prior owner and tenant's activities. In addition, Prologis has committed to sustainable building practices, including targeting LEED Gold certification, using low carbon concrete, adding solar panels to power offices, and creating solar ready infrastructure for future expansion. Prologis also supports San Leandro's transition to a greener future by including 63 EV compatible stalls. The state-of-the-art facilities are far more efficient and sustainable than older industrial sites, demonstrating Prologis' commitment to a cleaner community and a cleaner environment. Prologis is standing up for San Leandro's working families. They've done this by signing a binding agreement to use the local workforce and pay family-supporting wages. Apprentices from our training centers will build this project. One of those is the one I graduated from, and it's just a few miles away from this project site. This project is being built at the right time and the right location. I urge you to support it. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Jason Ramsey. Mr. Mayor, this is the last public speaker.
Good evening, Mayor and City Council. My name is Jason Ramsey. I'm a San Leandro resident and a proud member of local IBEW Local 595. I'm just here to advocate for working families that live in San Leandro. IBEW 595 pays us a living wage, helps support families, and we help support this community. People like me spend our money in San Leandro and support local businesses, and we hope you push this project forward so that we can continue getting adequate wages and helping support San Leandro and all the businesses and activities that go on here. And so I urge you to go forward with this project. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. There is no more public comment.
Okay, so it's 8:08 and I've closed the public hearing. Let's move to the next element of this. At this point in time, although I don't expect it, I still will ask if there is a rebuttal by the appellant. Okay, so there's been no commentary by the appellant and there's no rebuttal to anything that has been said by the appellant. I move on to the next item, which is to ask whether City Council has any questions, any final thoughts before I accept a motion on accepting both of the resolutions that are recommended by staff. Councilmember Bolt.
Yes, I just want to say thank you to the public for coming out. Often we get in these discussions, we know what they're wrapped around, but to have you guys come out when you're not paid and gals come out when you're not paid to speak on projects in our community, it means a lot. So thank you. And additionally, thank you for choosing to have just a few speak instead of all 25 or so that are here and say the same thing. So I want to thank you on that. I do want to recognize Carpenters Local 713 for being here. this is something that we're going to continue to face in our community until we have the right legislation in place that requires developers to come in and pay families sustaining wages. It's just a fact. It's happening everywhere. So I'm taking this moment just to point that out, and maybe we can move on that as a council. I love the fact that Prologis is at a low point picking 68%, because we've seen other projects in this city go at much lower for union wages. So, you know, I support this project because it is so high, and seeing what you've done on the other projects. But until we as a council decide to put something in place that says, hey, this is what you're going to do, we're going to continue to have these appeals and processes coming from planning. So I'll leave it there.
Councilmember Acevedo.
Yeah, I want to thank all my union brothers and sisters for showing up tonight. Thank you for coming out, speaking up on this. This is an important issue, an important project that we need to pass, and I support it. And I'd like to move this rejection of the appeal forward. Thank you.
Okay, I'm going to see if I can reframe what you just said, just to make sure that we've got it nice and clean in our record. There are two resolutions that staff is recommending that we adopt. Is your motion that we accept both of those resolutions?
Yes.
Both. Perfect. So I've got a motion by Councilmember Acevedo to accept staff's recommendation to adopt both of the resolutions that are included in our materials. I'm going to go to Councilmember Simon next.
I just had a comment. I just wanted to as well thank all the unions that came out today. 713 Carpenters, as well as IBW, Sheet Metal Workers, just everyone that's come out from the unions. This is a, you know, it's tough when you've got different unions looking at different positions. But I think overall that we have supporting as a, you know, as a whole, bringing a lot of union jobs into our city is a great thing. And I do want to continue to work with the city, as Councilmember Bolt has said, to try to better improve jobs, even better than this, for all of our unions that are here today. So I'd like to second the motion.
We've got a motion by Councilmember Acevedo with a second from Councilmember Simon to move forward with staff's recommendation to adopt two resolutions as outlined, as presented in our agenda packet. Seeing no further discussion, please vote.
All votes are in. Motion passes unanimous, 7-0.
Okay, so at this point in time, we're going to move to item 8C, which is public hearing number 2 to receive input from the community on city council districts to be established for district-based elections beginning 2026. And again, as in prior meetings, prior gatherings, prior hearings like this, there's not a need for council members to comment or respond to all the items that were raised. We will have our own opportunity to deliberate on this topic. At this point in time, I do have City Clerk Kelly Clancy presenting on this item.
Thank you, Mayor and Council. There is no presentation for this item tonight because we heard it first on April 21st, and it is just a repeat. Tonight is the second public hearing to give the public a chance to come and speak during the public comment. We will have two more opportunities at the next two regular council meetings. And at the time, I have zero public comments, hands up online, and no cards in person.
It is 8:13, and I'm opening the public hearing. So at this point in time, people have the opportunity to offer their thoughts on this item. I don't think we have any in person. You've already told me that. So let's go online, please.
Okay, we'll go online. Waiting for. Mitch Heidema, you may unmute yourself.
Hello, everybody. I am just calling in to say that I see positives and negatives on both sides of this. There are risks and costs either way. But I also feel like, as far as I can tell, with the state law change, we don't really have much of a choice in this, as far as I can tell. And if that is the case, then I would really like for the city to not spend more money than is necessary fighting or dealing with this or having special elections or anything else. Let's not pour more money into this than we have to. Thanks.
Thank you. Lucas, you may unmute yourself.
Thank you. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Thank you. Thank you for taking my comment. I remember in 2022, which I think was the last time that I called about a similar item when the districts were getting adjusted here and there, the district plan map included an approximate number of residents in each district. District 5, and I draw the council's attention to I guess the meeting notes from, I think it was sometime in April, I can look it up later, of 2022. But at the time, District 5 was assigned an estimated number of 14,463 residents. I'm looking at the map right now. District 3 was assigned 15,663 residents. And at the time, I called asking, you know, is it fair to have districts where we know upfront going into the map that there's a more or less a 10% difference in the number of residents between the districts? I know the council dealt with it one way or another. What worries me is that in the April presentation that we had a few weeks back, April 7, the map was shared. It's not very much different from the map, you know, from 2022, but a map was shared, but the map does not have an estimated number of residents in each district. And, you know, the population has shifted, you know, new apartments, buildings have been built. And I wonder, are the districts still more or less in balance, or is there still a 10% difference in the number of residents of different districts? I would ask that the council ensure proportional representation for all citizens of our city. Maybe update the map, publish the number of estimated residents based on census data so we know whether these districts are balanced or not. Thank you. Also, District 1 and District 2 make no sense. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Mayor, that is it for public comment.
Well, at this point, it's 8:17, and I am closing the public hearing. I do see Councilmember Azevedo in queue. Is that from before? Okay, so I will proceed with Councilmember Azevedo's question.
Yes, I have a question pertaining to the flyers. We have a flyer in English, and it has a nice map and everything. But the flyer in Spanish and Chinese, it's just words on there. Can we adjust that one to look more like the English one so people get an outlook on it? I don't know if you guys looked at it, but the flyers for the Spanish and the Chinese one are just like black and white, dull.
Yeah, so all of the flyers handed out at the farmer's market are the same. They're English, Spanish, Chinese, two-sided. They're identical. This was okay. Just happened to be for the newspaper.
Okay. That's what I wanted. Okay, so the ones that we are handing out are all the same.
Correct. They're all identical. Yes, it was. Those were just the newspaper examples, and it was a black and white newspaper because they're very costly newspapers, so the text was more important.
Okay.
And we gave a link to the website where all of the information is there in detail.
Okay. Because the day I was at the farmer's market, we weren't handing this stuff out. So I didn't know. Okay, now I know. Thank you.
Yep. Any other questions or comments at this time? Okay, seeing none, let's move to item 8D. So considering whether we adopt a resolution approving amendments to the city master fee schedule for fiscal years 25 through 26, and accordingly, if so, to introduce and adopt three ordinances to amend various.
Mayor, I'm sorry to interrupt. Did we close the public hearing?
That's a good question. I thought I had, but okay. I thought I said 8:17, but if I didn't, just to be double, triple sure, I think it's good to be good. So it's 8:19. And if I didn't close it before, it's definitely closed now. Thank you very much for keeping me on my toes. If I was on the back of my heels. So to continue this, moving with item 8D, we set? Okay. So with item 8D, we have Assistant Finance Director Felicia Silva to lead us through this.
Thank you very much, IT. Felicia Silva, Assistant Finance Director, Mayor Gonzalez, members of the council, here to present our annual proposed fees and also the user fee study results. The city embarked on a comprehensive user fee study, and so we'll give a summary of results. So every so often, it's important that the city review some of their fees to make sure that they're up to date and we're keeping keeping up with the cost of delivering service. The city went out for RFP and engaged NBS for their expertise, and they worked with city staff to collect various data points such as costs and time to provide certain services with the goal of really trying to understand the full cost of providing service so that we can look at setting our fees and or resetting our fees as may be necessary. In addition, you will note that there, if you looked at the fee study at all, there were quite a few administrative changes. And so while we're looking at the cost to provide the service, we're also looking at overall just bringing the fees up to date. So you may have seen some that moved from department to department and or the way that we're charging the fee changed. And so really just a comprehensive look at our fees, both in terms of cost and what it would take to recover those costs, as well as what it would take to administer those costs. And so project scope, we focused on cost-based user fees. So we have various fees, use of government property, fines and penalties. And again, we do bring our fees annually. I think the big difference here is that we have the results of the cost-based user fees study. So we did take a look across the board at all of our fees and made recommendations for updates as applicable. There are also some other fees that are governed by different legislation, such as our wastewater fees that are governed by Proposition 218. You heard that a little earlier tonight. And then we also have development impact fees that are governed by AB 1600, that those fees are actually also being studied and will be in front of you later this year. Authority for the fees. So Proposition 26, Article 13, defines the difference between a tax and a fee. There are certain exceptions that allow governments to charge specific user groups or individuals for services that they specifically benefit from, with making sure that the cost of the fee, or the fee rather, is limited to the reasonable cost for providing that service. Similarly, California Government Code 66014A also authorizes the city to charge reasonable costs for providing certain fees related to services such as development related fees and building permits, et cetera. Okay, so a large part of this fee study was really defining our costs, so looking at all of our costs, and they looked at all data points for direct costs, salaries and benefits, services and supplies, also looking at indirect costs, which could be supervision or management, In addition, looking at support costs, including costs across all departments. So, for example, if there's a permit that is reviewed across multiple departments, making sure that we're accounting for all of those costs. We also have other costs related to more cyclical items, such as things like systems. We have a permitting system, for example, and we need to make sure that we're keeping up with the cost of maintaining that technology, as well as making sure that we're keeping up with the cost to replace. So all of that together coming up with how we're defining our costs. Next steps were the per unit cost analysis. And I know I'm going really fast and giving a very, very high level overview. Simple high-level overview. But we talked about looking at all of the costs that we just went over in the slide before. The next step of defining the unit cost is looking at how many actual staff hours are available to provide that service. So when you take the staff hours and or potentially contract staff hours that are available to provide the service, and you divide it by the amount of our costs, you come up with the fully burdened hourly rate. The second piece of the equation is the time to complete the activity and or provide the service. So coming up with that, and that is how we're able to set the fee as the maximum amount. A detailed summary of results. So looking at this slide, I want to take you from left to right. And so the first column that you see are the various departments, and we did really organize the fees by department. And looking then at the next column, which is annual estimated revenues at the current fee. So that's looking at what, you know, potential revenue at the current fee. The next step, column, is what revenue could be if we were at full cost recovery. And so I do want to take a second and just acknowledge that the city may not want to achieve full cost recovery for every service provided. So for example, the city may have economic development goals that they want to meet, making sure that services are accessible to the community. And so with that in mind, when we look at the existing cost recovery percentage, we end up seeing that it's 53%. But when you start to look at the detail, you can see that we're actually doing pretty good in terms of cost recovery. And a lot of the lower percentage cost recovery are related to some of those services that we want to make sure remain accessible, such as recreation and parks, human services. To the right of that, you'll see that staff has made some recommendations for cost recovery. And again, keeping in mind trying to recover costs as much as we can, but taking that in consideration with other city council goals or priorities that we might want to meet. Along those lines, this really quickly shows you on the left is the full cost of service. That's NBS leading us through this cost of service study and coming up with our full cost, helping us come up with our full cost of service. And then you can see that the green square is more or less where we're at with revenue from the current fee. And then when you look at the red arrow, that's the gap. And so we can either meet that gap by increasing the fees, or it would have to be subsidized by non-fee general fund revenue. Okay, really quickly, where have we been? Where are we going? So we reviewed the results of the fee study. We have provided the results of the fee study over the course of a year almost with Finance Committee. We've incorporated that feedback into the recommended fee schedule. And now we're in front of you with some proposed fees
The current revenue estimate is about $945,000 for updates related to charges and services, as well as licenses and permits. And I do just want to make a point that it's not just the fees that we're looking at in terms of the revenue estimate, but then also taking into account the demand for services. A lot going on here. We also have other taxes that we bring before you annually that the municipal code allows us to increase by CPI, business license tax, emergency medical services tax, and emergency communication systems access tax. We did the year over year, and we're recommending 2.4% increase. And with that, asking City Council to approve the resolution amending the fee schedule with proposed fees for 25-26. And three ordinances approving the rate adjustments for business license tax, emergency medical services tax, and emergency communication systems access tax.
At this point in time, thank you for your presentation and for sticking to your time. We really appreciate that. At this point in time, we will take any questions from council that have not been addressed in the presentation already. Thank you, Councilmember Bolt.
Yes, thank you for the presentation. I just want to clarify in the one slide where we had revenues, it showed that the police department in particular was 131%. My guess is that because we haven't filled the slots, and so it's budgeted, but we don't use it, so therefore existing cost recovery is 131%. Is that what I'm reading, or am I completely off?
Yeah, thank you. And I'm going to turn this over to NBS. I stuck with my time, but I didn't get a chance to let you all know that NBS is here to provide any answers to questions such as those for, related to the methodology, the fee study, and the results, as well as staff to answer any questions. And do we have Nicole on the line? Nicole, if you can help us answer that question, I appreciate it.
Good evening, Mayor and City Council.
We can come back to it later. It's fine. I just want to be.
She's on. I just have to change it. Okay, Nicole, you should be able to speak now.
Oh, test. Good evening.
You just can't show the presentation and have you talk at the same time. That's the problem.
Nicole, I don't know if you caught it, but we're looking at the detailed summary of results. And the question was police cost recovery is greater than the actual, or the fees are greater than the costs, greater than the cost.
Yes, I think it's important to remember here with police fees that the majority of what this department does for the community has nothing to do with these miscellaneous fees for services that are charged or evaluated through the study, right? So this is just a very small fraction of recovery of costs for a department with a very large mission and organizational structure. So, you know, the types of fees that we're looking at here are fees for fingerprinting and fees for some miscellaneous permits that police needs to look at, such as for massage and acupuncture. And in this case, what you're seeing in that 131% cost recovery outcome, I think it stands out because it looks like a large over recovery, but we're talking about very small dollars. And when I kind of look into the detail of where that figure comes from, kind of back in the appendices of the full report, I see actually that there's a fee for tobacco retailers, an annual permit fee that's dropping several hundred dollars based on, you know, the prior fee was around $5, and it looks like the level of effort that goes into that regulatory service is not coming up with $500. So that's where most of that decrease in revenue, or, you know, higher than annual cost recovery, is coming from. So it doesn't have anything to do with, you know, budgeting for positions and not filling them. It's just more on a per unit basis based on current demand for the service that there's a couple fees in here that need to come down while the rest need to go up, which is a typical outcome of any fee study. Let me stop there and see if anybody has any further questions.
No, that's fair. I was thinking in a whole different, I was in left field, to be honest. So That really helps. Thank you.
Yeah.
Do we have other questions at this point in time? Okay, seeing no questions, I'm going to go to public comment on this item at this time.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. We only have one hand up online for public comment.
Please proceed online.
Thank you. IT, can we go online? Ginny Madsen, you may unmute yourself.
So thank you for letting me speak again. This is Ginny Madsen, and I just couldn't avoid calling out the fact that in the emergency medical services tax, you charge 2 to 5 living units 3 times the amount that you do for 6 or more living units. I mean, at first I thought that was some sort of typo. I mean, it just makes no sense why you would charge so much more for smaller dwellings. One living unit is one benefit unit, and 2 to 5 living units is 3, and 6 or more living units is back to 1. What is the reason for that? Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Mayor, there is no more public comment.
Okay, so I'll close public comment, but I will ask the question myself, trying to, can we pull up the example that Ms. Madsen was speaking of to just better understand? And then she was talking about the emergency costs, emergency services fee, and the way that it's allocated between the different units.
Sorry, it's not on the fee schedule. We would need to look either at the current rate online on the Muni Code, or also we can pull up the resolution. So let me see, if you give me a moment, I can try and get to that online. And I don't know if anyone here, Susan or Mike or anyone, might have some background on that.
So I think instead of speculating, we're just going to put a pin on it for just a second. Let's go find the actual answer. While that's happening, if one or two of you can look for that, we will move to other council member questions or commentary at this point in time, if there is any. Council member Aguilar, please.
Thank you, Mayor. If there are no other questions, once we figure out and clarify, I'd like to adopt the resolution approving amendments to the city master fee schedule for fiscal year 25-26 and adopt 3 ordinances to amend various San Leandro municipal code sections providing for annual rate adjustments for 25-26 to business license fees, emergency medical service tax, and emergency communication system access tax.
Okay, and I want to be really precise about something. I didn't formally open the public hearing. As a matter of legal record, I want to turn to my city attorney and say, when we accepted public comment, can we treat that as formally opening the public hearing, or do I need to make that statement?
That was the opening of the public hearing.
Perfect. And so we've opened the public hearing, having heard from Ms. Madsen and nobody else. I'm closing the public hearing, so that I'll just get my formalities in place. Then coming to you, I will accept your motion to move forward the recommendations from our staff, Councilmember Aguilar. Is there a second on that motion? Councilmember Azevedo?
I'll second it.
Okay, so we've got a motion from Councilmember Aguilar, a second from Councilmember Azevedo. And then, staff, do we happen to have an answer or a clarification at this point in time? And is
I can give you an answer, but I don't know that it'll clarify much, and I would like to take the opportunity to get back to you. It looks like Rich might have more insight, and so be happy to hear from him if he does.
Otherwise, I would just note that it says that it's based on benefit unit and determined by the use to which the owner or occupant has put the property. So I would want to delve a little further into that to make sure that we understand that instead of trying to provide an answer on the fly.
Okay, thank you.
Councilmember Bolt.
I think that's a very good question for us to understand and look into before we just adopt, and then we'll worry about it next, you know, next time we go to do this. For me, it's if you're charging more to the low, because this is going to be the low income portion of our community in these type of dwellings, and now we're going to charge them more than we're going to charge everybody else. That doesn't sit right with me, and I wouldn't want to support that and move forward and adopt this.
Okay, so we're trying to get some clarification on exactly what's being referenced, because I know sometimes there can be confusion on cost per unit, total cost for a group of four that then has to be divided by four. So I'd rather not speculate, but council member, city attorney has been doing some research over here on the side.
Thank you, Mayor. I would point, first of all, members of the public to the findings from the ordinance 2-13-110. And they provide a very detailed analysis of why the benefit unit procedure was used back when this was adopted by the council. It is lengthy, but if you wanted me to summarize it, essentially, it's based on different land uses that were assigned a different number of benefit uses. And the weighted land use classification system at the time was developed by the Alameda County Emergency Medical Services District and the Alameda County Assessor. That means that the classification system was based on an analysis that was done by those parties and entities, and they assigned the various land use types based on a countywide survey of the demand for services of this type of service that this tax pays for. Non-residential uses are assigned a benefit unit based on uses ranging from 2 to 7. All that to me means is that in order to change this, if the council wanted to change this, would require a vote of the electorate, because this is a tax. This also tells me that it was relied upon, and it was a reasonable time for that council. This council may have a different opinion, but in order to do that, you'd have to go through a study and take whatever change methodology back to the voters if you want to change it. What we're before us is just the increase based what's already in the code that allows us to increase the taxes according to the CPI, which is stated explicitly in the municipal code as we're allowed to do.
So just to elaborate and put a fine point on that, whatever the price is per unit that's been established for a while now, we're saying increase it, I think it was by 2.4% to reflect CPI. So we're not rejiggering the fee in some way. Coming back to Councilmember Bolt.
Thank you. So at this point, we're charging them more per unit, and we're going to increase it more per unit.
I want to be very careful. There was an assertion by a member of the public, and we don't actually have the document that the description, the actual evidence of what she's referring to. And so I think at this point in time, what we're saying, there has been no public complaint prior to today about something being disproportional or inequitable. Today, we're simply saying whatever the current method is that residents have not been complaining about prior to this public comment, we're saying all of those are being adjusted by the CPI.
Understood. Thank you. And for me, someone who grew up in an apartment building, I understand how people in certain parts of our community were taxed and didn't know anything about it and continued to pay the burden at a higher clip because they weren't involved. And so because of that, I couldn't support this If staff was to say, no, Dylan, you got it wrong, you're actually not charging them more per parcel or unfairly, as I'm going to use that word, unfairly, why should they be paying more just because they live in a smaller community or a smaller dwelling, tight-knit community than somebody who doesn't? And I can hear through the lines, well, this group, let's just go back in the day. Well, this group uses the services more, so we're going to charge them more. And they know nothing about it because everybody up here decided to make a decision that wouldn't truly affect them. So what I'm saying is if we can't have the answer to that and we can't remove that portion of an increase, then I couldn't support it because her reading that to us is a red flag. And it should signal us all to say, okay, let's pause. Let's make sure that we're not making a mistake and unfairly charging that portion of our community more. I'm done. Thank you.
If I may, just I wanted to clarify and maybe just make one point. I certainly am not the expert on this, but I did just want to point out that it's per benefit unit, which is basically our city attorney mentioned, a use of land. It is not clear to me on the ordinance that this tax is actually passed down or how it might be passed down to any specific renter or other occupant of any of these other uses. So I just wanted to make that point. And also just to give a little context, the current tax rate per benefit unit is currently $22.08, and it would go up to $22.60. So just to give a little more context.
Okay, so I'm going to kind of come around here. The various people I think went to weigh in. I'm going to go to city manager and let city manager allocate the Q&A.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The assistant city manager, Michael Ewan, has some information to share.
Thank you. Through the chair, Councilmember Bolt, to answer your specific question, the way that I am reading the Muni Code is, and as Assistant Director Silva just mentioned, the benefit unit is proposed at $22.60 per year. And for one living, for a building of one living unit, that gets charged one benefit unit. So $22.60 for a one unit building. For two to five living units, it's three benefit units for that building. Again, charged to either the owner or occupant, however they may choose, the owner chooses. For six or more living units, that's the only situation where it's one benefit unit per unit. So in the prior examples, it's just either one benefit unit or three benefit units. For six or more units in the building, that's when you get to one benefit unit per building. And then for all the other categories, as you see in attachment C of the report, that's each building, each defined building has a defined benefit unit that's applied to it. Not sure if that helps answer your question, but that's how it's written in the Muni Code.
Through the chair to my, thank you. So if I heard you correctly, one unit is the $22.60. If you have two to five units, you're getting charged three. So if you have five, there's a benefit there. They're getting charged less. Once you get over six, you can no longer do that benefit, and everybody gets charged the exact amount after that per the amount of units.
Yes, Councilmember, both through the chair, that is how the Muni Code is written.
Beautiful. Thank you very much. It makes me feel better.
Okay, so thank you. Is there any additional clarification that anyone wants to offer from the staff side? If there is, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I apologize for prolonging this one, but I'm looking at attachment C, and I'm going to direct my question to Finance Director, Assistant Finance Director, Assistant City Manager. On attachment C, it lists property uses and it lists the benefit unit. And as Assistant City Manager has mentioned, one living unit is one, 2 to 5 living units is 3. But this document then says 6 or more living units is 1. So if I'm reading that correctly, 6 or more living units is the same as 1 living unit. Maybe for the record, confirm if I'm reading this correctly.
You are reading that correctly. I would say that that is a typo, that what is printed in our memo, in our municipal code, for 6 or more living unit, it is 1 benefit unit, or 1 per benefit unit. And so that should be congruent with how we see it in our municipal code. So it is 1 per unit once you hit the 6 or more living unit. So we are not proposing to make that change. So,
and so I just want to make, so it's painfully obvious for me, the municipal code is correct. The municipal code essentially says if I got 6 units, I got 6 apartments, I've got 6 benefit units. The way it's typed in this presentation essentially should say 1 per unit instead of just 1.
That is accurate.
Okay. So I think we're all clarified, and it was just a, I'll just call it a typo in the documentation. And we will, just for the sake of clarity of the motion maker and for the motion seconder, so I'm going to council member, I think it was Aguilar and Acevedo. I just want to make sure that we're all on the same page, that the final adjustment will remain consistent with what we've discussed here.
Yes.
Okay, so you accept that clarification making your motion, you accept that clarification making your second. At this point in time, do we have any additional questions? Seeing none, let's vote.
All votes are in, motion passes unanimous, 7-0.
Thank you.
Okay. So we have no, thank you for your presentation. At this point in time, I do want to take our presentations. We have none, so we have 2 action items that we need to take. I think because we have 1 action item that we need to take, I think before taking that, because that's going to be an extensive discussion, why don't we take a brief recess? And by brief, I mean that cell phone time, we will be back at 9:05.
Okay, it's 9:05 and I'm calling us back to order. We've got Kelly, City Clerk's Kelly Clancy presenting an item regarding the adoption of a resolution to approve updates and edits to the City Council Handbook.
Thank you, Mayor and Council members. Tonight before you is the Council Member Handbook update. I am going to keep it brief because this item has been previously brought before you April 7th and it was tabled until tonight. Nothing has changed. It is the same presentation and all the same everything that was presented April 7th.
Thank you. And then I'll remind council members that this did come to Rules Committee and it has come here for any final discussion and approval. So with that, do we have any questions for the clerk? Seeing no questions, I want to go to public comment on this item.
Mr. Mayor, I have no public comment in person or online.
So I'll close public comment and bring it back to council for discussion or a motion to approve. Council Member Azevedo.
Yes, I wanted to change the, right now I talked to the city manager about it. With the, we have $100 apparel for each year. I wanted to see about rolling it over to the next year, if the council would approve that, because when you only get $100, you order one thing and then you have some money left over for the next year. I don't know about you guys, but yeah. So yeah, I just want to see if we can roll it over for at least 1 year. That's okay with you guys.
Okay, so what we're going to do is let's see if we can take just a few suggestions, because if we can just tweak a few things, I'll say let's try to get a motion that captures the tweak of those things. If we're going to end up with a lot of things, then I will suggest we take it back to rules and we just analyze it again. So I've got in my notes, at least, a rollover of any unspent apparel budget for 1 year. Proceeding to Councilmember Simon.
Thank you. I've got quite a few edits, so I have typed them up and I'm handing them out. What I tried to do to be as transparent as I could was send these out via email last week so full council could review these and see these. However, as recommended by legal and city manager to not violate the Brown Act, I have instead, we'll discuss it today. It's a little bit not as efficient, but at least there are no Brown Act issues. I have copies for the members of the public if any are needed here. And I'll kind of start and go from there. First, I do want to appreciate staff for help developing this, Kelly. And some of the input is from different cities. So I did get a copy of all the different cities where these code of ethics were developed from to give me a little more context. Also, just to clarify, I'm new to the Rules Committee. But this development started before me last year when there was a different Rules Committee makeup as well as a different council. So I'm glad we're able to have this discussion here today. What I'd like to do in this handout is I have a total of six modifications I'd like to propose. And HB1, that's Handbook 1. So that first one, what I'd like to do, and I do believe that the city of Morgan Hill has done a very nice job on their code of ethics. And they have followed a value-based approach to ethical behavior rather than a rules-based system. And I'll just go ahead and read out some of this. And I updated it to reflect City of San Leandro. City of San Leandro has adopted this ethics code to promote the highest standards of personal and professional ethics by individuals charged with carrying on the city's business. This is a values-based approach to ethical behavior rather than a rules-based approach. It is not intended to address all potential ethical issues may arise or to replace the various code of ethics of professional associations or California Assembly Bill 1234, Training of Public Service Ethics Laws and Principles, rather to supplement these codes. AB 1234, ethics is a top priority for City of San Leandro. Representatives of the City of San Leandro shall be ethical. This means that they shall practice the following core values. A, honesty. I am honest with my fellow elected officials, the public, and others. I am prepared to make unpopular decisions when my sense of the public's best interest requires it, and I take responsibility for my actions, even when it is uncomfortable to do so. I am trustworthy. B, respect. I treat my fellow officials, staff, and the public with patience, courtesy, and civility, even when we disagree on what is best for the community. I respect others' time by coming to meetings prepared and offering observations when I believe it will move the discussion forward. I will work to gain value from diverse opinions and build consensus. I am approachable, open-minded, and willing to participate in dialogue, and I work to convey this to others. I recognize government's responsibilities to everyone. I convey the agency's care for a commitment to its community members through my words and deeds, and I am attuned to and care about the needs of the issues of its citizens, public officials, and agency workers. And it goes on. You see it written here. Responsibility, similar discussion of values, fairness, again, values, loyalty, values. And again, that's different than the rules-based. And just to kind of point out, the version that was pulled from a different city includes some inconsistencies, such as avoiding using public resources for public personal political gain, which we definitely shouldn't be avoiding. We don't do that. So I think it's better to have a value base, and I'm recommending that. The next is the vice mayor role. I agree with the proposed edit that's presented here in the docket, but I do believe that we should include the word "should be nominated." That's the only change recommended I have there, just to give us flexibility in our vote. Number three is in chapter one, page six, and I did discuss this one in the Rules Committee, and I did have some after discussions on this one, but I would like to change the request for future agenda items and urgent referrals in the second paragraph in its entirety with the following. Items referred by council as urgent matters shall be prioritized of all other already established priorities and may impact progress of other high priority projects. An urgent referral can be made during item 11 at a regular council meeting and added to a standing rules committee meeting, including a dedicated urgent referrals item. That will be held once a quarter in March, June, September, and December. The December meeting falls on a holiday, and urgent referrals are needed to be reviewed. Then another special rules committee will be held in December timeframe. The rules committee will vet all the urgent referrals, and all urgent referrals, even the ones not being agreed upon by rules, will be brought to the next council meeting following the rules committee meeting for final council approval or disapproval. This will allow us to discuss items that don't have a lot of staff time necessary, such as Native American recognition, or for example, pulling things off of the website, such as censure information that's up there and there's no longer discipline in place. Those would be easy for us to talk about as council. Next is HB 4. This is the reimbursement for expenses for traveling and training. And I wanted to replace the last paragraph on page 18 with the following. And at the end of each fiscal year, a year-end report on council member travel and training expenditures will be added to a regular Central Council meeting agenda on consent calendar. If the council member has unused funds in their business travel training budget, the unused funds shall be deposited or set aside into a separate fund per council member and held for one fiscal year to be used by that council in a manner that supports a community benefit. So that way we could use it for any idea that we have as a council member that supports our community. Alternatively, unused funds shall be deposited or set aside in a separate funder pool for one fiscal year. And that's the language that we had already included. Second to last is meeting attendance. Wanted to change that meeting attendance such that we notify the city manager and the city clerk. I think two people is adequate, especially people that are staffed. And last item is city council member handbook acknowledgement. I'm recommending that we delete this entire page and do not replace it, as we have an oath of office that covers this issue. Thank you.
Councilmember Rivera Walton, please.
I would have to take a look at, this is the first time seeing the proposed edits on the code of ethics. So I'm not going to comment on that at this time. But in terms of the vice mayor, I'd like to keep it where it's at. What I do would want to have a discussion would be on requests for future items, agenda items, and urgent referrals. I think I would like to have a midpoint check-in, because as the requests come in, the council has to wait a whole year. But I would like the rules committee to at least vet them, like at like a 6-month interval. So we can at least figure out which ones have budget implications, which ones don't have a budget implication, and which ones are low lift items but high impact. So I do agree with Councilmember Simon on having a touch point. I don't know that it's quarterly. I think the cadence there might be a little much. But we definitely do need to have one, kind of like a midpoint review to kind of figure out where we are, how many of them fall into the already voted on priority areas. And then in terms of the community benefit, I think this is something that I've been also having some thoughts about. I don't usually travel unless it's particularly with the current environment. I see myself a lot more effective at the state level. So traveling to Sacramento to do day lobbying trips or something like that. But I would like to use some of my budget that is currently for travel and training for hosting a community meeting where I'm able to provide childcare or be able to contribute to something so that the public can come to the meetings and provide some sort of accommodation, whether it's I'm able to pay out of my budget to do translation services or to provide childcare or to provide food so that the community is able to, I'm able to alleviate some of the concerns that community members have raised and their inability to come to public meetings and or host a community meeting. So I would like a little bit of flexibility on that. I do think we need to acknowledge that we have signed and have read the council member handbook. I think that is important. And in terms of the notification, of not attending a meeting, I mean, is there a specific reason as to why we have to, I guess I don't have an issue with that. I've only missed one meeting and it was a emergency and I emailed everyone, so I thought it was fine. Those are all my comments, but I think I would like to focus on a little bit of flexibility on the funds to be able to do a community benefit. I would like, I do agree on some sort of check-in point on the future agenda items and urgent referrals as a midpoint, but I think it should be vetted through rules. And I'm not ready to talk about ethics yet because I'm okay with what's on the current red line that was sent from rules over to council. I'm okay with the current code of ethics as written. Those are all my comments.
Councilmember Aguilar, please.
Thank you, Mayor Gonzalez. With regards to requests for future agenda items and urgent referrals, I'd like to see what we saw at the last priority session, which is the ongoing list of where we are, because I think in 2024 we had an issue at the planning session where that list didn't show up, and it was discussed after the fact and showed up at the 2025 meeting, and indicate that so that we can have a timeline as to where we're at, what's in the hopper, what's in the back burner, and what we're currently working on. With regards to the strategic organizational training account, I'd like to redline the
training with regards to, I mean, if we're talking about a specific program, we should indicate what program we're looking to apply funds for, or is this just completely open, $17,400 for any program? With regards to, like, you know, looking at the Harvard program, the program is $17,900 now. There's a $500 increase on that, so I'd like to update that. So if there's anyone who would like to participate, we can indicate that. But I do support what Councilmember Simon had suggested. And I don't have anything else to add at this moment, but those are my additions. Thank you.
Councilmember Bolt, please.
Yes, thank you. I'd just like to say good job, Councilmember Simon. There's a lot of work I could tell you put into it, so thank you for making this available to us. I don't have a problem switching from switching to a values-based system. I think that always works best. That's exactly what I'm used to from the military, because that's how we performed. It's on your own merit. Nomination of the vice mayor, should or shall, I mean, that doesn't mean anything to me. Future agenda items. I hear what you're saying, Councilmember Walton, that maybe once a year would be enough, but I don't have I haven't heard one, maybe only one since I've been here, even being brought up now. So I like the idea that it gets vetted through rules. And I don't have a problem with March, June, September, December, because if nobody's even bringing any to us, they're not even going to come there. We're not even going to talk about them here, right? So maybe something is that important between the 1 year, you know, the tweener in March and not in June. But, you know, either way, I'm okay. I personally don't. I wouldn't go against us if the idea was to use that for a community benefit. But I like that money going back to the general fund and overall helping. I went to a great community session that the vice mayor put on, and I don't think that cost you anything, but I could be wrong. I could be completely wrong. Maybe you paid out of pocket, but I thought that was well done, and I don't think we need to get into spending a bunch of money on these things when we can get them done for free. I don't have a problem with Councilmember Simon's suggestion of telling one or the other or something for, you know, because I don't want to be, if I'm going to miss a meeting, I don't want to be, oh, well, you didn't tell so-and-so. Well, guess what? I didn't tell you. Now what? Well, you're not going to let me into the next one? You know what I mean? Like, we're just going to get into problems there. So telling one person, I think, should be significant. The signing of it, I agree with him, with Councilmember Simon. That's our oath. You know, we sign that. We take an oath. Signing a handbook is redundant to me. But lastly, and I think most important, has this language been vetted through our attorney, the stuff that we're proposing? Have you gone through and read it? And the reason I'm asking is because there was a line, and I don't exactly remember where it was, and I should have it ready, but I just wanted to hear what everybody else said. But it was avoid using city funds for political and something. I mean, that should not be in there. You can't do that. So I think if we're going through and having, I would never vote to accept this without legal looking at it and saying, okay, here you go, here you go, here you go. But yeah, oh, I think you're almost there. I think it was in, was it in six or three? Anyways, I feel like some other people saw, oh, right there. Is that it? Six, avoid. Avoid using public resources for personal or political gain. Us putting that in there is wrong. You can't do that. So if the lawyers aren't going through and going, hey, you guys, what are you doing? I wouldn't support, honestly, I wouldn't support any of it, just because I don't know what else we would miss or not put in. So I'll stop there.
Vice Mayor.
Thank you, Mayor. I'll say, I'm trying to take as many notes as possible. This is a lot of information. This was already in rules. And so I'm taken aback by the fact that we're going over all of this now when Councilmember Simon was in rules at the time. But I understand that things can come up afterwards, but this is significant. So I can't go into a lot of details, but I'll just try to go bit by bit about what has been said. One, if you look at the Morgan Hill City Council policies and procedures ethics policy, what you'll see that he pulled out was the core values, which is much broader: honesty, respect, responsibility, fairness. But then right after that is accountability. So on a yearly basis, on or before the due date of the Form 700, all persons subject to the policy should sign a statement affirming that they have read and understood the provisions of this policy within the last 30 days. And so it is an annual signing to affirm that they've read and understand. Second part of the accountability piece, which is why you have a code of ethics, is violations of this policy by commission, committee, board members, and anyone appointed by the city council in any manner may be punishable in the discretion of a majority of the city council by censure, public reproval, removal from appointed office, or serious violations warranting criminal charges, referral of the matter to the Santa Clara County District Attorney's Office. So they actually explicitly state what accountability means. There's also an annual review of the ethics policy, reviewed on an annual basis. And then after that, what is not included in what was presented, which I would need added if we're going to change it to a values based, is actually three, four pages that actually lists out every single one of the values, what the expressions of those core values are, which is I respect the confidentiality of information concerning the agency's property, et cetera, which is loyalty. And then it actually highlights positive behaviors and negative behaviors. So for example, they actually explicitly state giving out information when it serves my personal purpose, even if it hurts other, I would not do that. And then actually part of the council guidelines is to actually call out every one of those behaviors if it happens in real time. So I think it would be a good idea to actually pull out from the one we have what ethical leadership means as the values, and then we could break it down even further the way that Morgan Hill did, so that we can actually explicitly say, not just in theory, I think you're being disrespectful, but on page 18, it says being disrespectful is lying or misdirecting or misinforming. Then I can say, you know what, this is where it happens. And so I would be supportive of actually going to values as long as we actually define what those values mean, and then what those actions are, positive or negative, to make sure that we can be held accountable. So I'll say that about the, but also because this is very complex, if we're gonna go into the nitty gritty of the ethics, we could send it back to rules. That would be my recommendation. Otherwise, I think we're what is on here originally with our actually more broad council members code of ethics for the city of San Leandro, I would want to just keep it, approve it, and I would also want to ensure that we sign the handbook. I think that, the personal interest thing, I would be curious about the code of ethics that we, training that we have to do every year, every 2 years. I think part of that training actually states that we can't, really explicit and expresses in different ways how we should not be doing the things for our personal interest, but we need to be doing it for public interest. The second thing I want to say is about the vice mayor, if we change vice mayor, should be, should, I assume, versus shall means it's optional. If it's optional, then what is the point of having it there? Because then we should just go back to what we originally had before we changed it last year. Otherwise, it basically nullifies the having the policy there. If it's a should, then we could or could not, which doesn't make sense to me. The third one about the urgent referral with a midpoint to have it go through rules, I could see that being helpful in trying to understand context, or if there's a surge in interest or a real need for us to address something. I would just want to make sure that we're not doing work for the sake of doing work if we're not really going to be able to do anything about that. And then I'll just finish with my fourth comment about the community, the funds for a community public benefit. I actually didn't spend money. What we did spend money was actually on staff time, which I really appreciate. And I know that staff, city manager, and other directors are also avail themselves to the council members too if they would like to do an event. What I was interested in doing last year, the year before, when I with former city manager Fran Robastelli was to have a limited amount funds, whatever it was, like $500 for each council member to be able to use for a public benefit event, whether it was supporting like a block party, or if a community wanted to do a cleanup, then you could get certain supplies or breakfast and those things. And then one of the things that in those conversations we wanted to make sure we could define was what would the criteria be and how it would be used. And so maybe that's something that we can look at if we were to be able to allocate any of the funds, to make sure we come up with a process and a criteria to ensure that we're actually using it, again, for the public interest and not for political gain.
Okay, so then I will go, and then we'll probably go to a motion here. So I'll start with the basic premise that I'm fine with a manual, a handbook as it is right now. I don't really see any need to change it. We went through rules, we came back. I think what's there is good. We can always keep going back and back and back to try to get perfect, but I'm fine with what's there. I would agree that there's a difference between a code of conduct and a code of ethics. And when I arrived at the city of San Leandro government, there was neither. And one of the very first things that I talked about is that we need something here. So I think that we need something there, full stop. I would agree with Vice Mayor that the additional pieces of the Morgan Hill website should be included at the very least. But that's a detailed discussion that should not be happening here at the dais. That should be handled in rules. With respect to the vice mayor piece, I also agree that if we're going to water down the language, let's just say let's vote for vice mayor. Let's keep it the way that it was in the beginning. I'm not sure why we went down this path to have some kind of complicated system. I would say let's just go back to we as a body elect a vice mayor. The end. When it comes to urgent referrals, a lot of time was spent moving the council to focus on priorities and the recognition that a significant amount of time was going into dealing with on-the-spot referrals. We defined urgency. We defined that it really needed to be urgent, so we needed a lot of council members to agree on it. And I think that we, as an example, at one point in time, if I'm not wrong, City Clerk, we had over 50 proclamations being issued in City Council chambers. I mean, it took the first 30 minutes of a meeting just issuing proclamations. Now, we recognize this group, and we have worked very attentively to pare down the proclamations. And so that was, you know, it might be a light lift for staff because someone brings language for a proclamation, but the question is that really serving the needs of the community? Can it be handled in another way than doing things here in City Council chambers? reimbursement. This is, and I'd be happy with like a half year check-in. I think, I don't know who suggested that, but I think that that's kind of like the right point in time. This concept of a, if you can get my clock running, so my clock isn't running, I'm sorry, give me like two or three more minutes. Reimbursement and rollover. And let's start with the basic premise that the travel that we do is for community benefit. If your travel is not for community benefit, you should not be traveling, period, full stop. If there's any of you that is not traveling for community benefit, you should stop traveling. I travel for the benefit of the community. That's the only reason I go out, because I think I can get more funding for the city, that I can attract a business to the city, that I can do something that benefits the city of San Leandro. So we should not ever believe that our travel is not for the community benefit. If we don't spend our money, I think that it should be saved for travel, or it should go back to the general fund. The moment that we give individual council members specific money for specific purposes, and then in some ways allow that to be labeled as council member X is doing this, I think that's problematic, because that's the city's resources being used with only that council member's name attached. It's really the city council's budget. It's all of our dollars. And really, to be very direct, it is our residents' dollars. It is not the dollars of any individual council member. I do have an affinity for this idea. We have a set aside of, you know, $1,000, $500, $2,000, pick a number. It's small for an annual community event, but all council members and the entire community should be invited to those events. It's not this exclusive, this is my event sort of a thing. So I think that needs to be vetted. Absolutely positively, I think that everyone should sign an acknowledgement of receipt. It's part of the Morgan Hill, as an example. And then on meeting attendance, who should be told, as the mayor, I'm the only one that's being dropped under that recommendation. As the chair of the meeting, it's useful to know who's going to be here and to follow up with city manager and making sure that I understand who's going to be here and what that might imply. And if there's something that that city council member wants to convey, to be able to reach out to that city council member and make sure that we're able to have those discussions in the fullness. I may not agree, but in the past, I've been very clear. I may not agree with something, but I will convey the message, because I think that the whole idea is us having a discussion that fully considers those pieces. So I do think that I should still be notified if someone's not coming to a meeting. With that being said, at this point in time, I would entertain a motion to move this back to rules, because there's a lot to be talked about. And given the available time between now and 10 o'clock, given the fact that there's going to be, we really should have time for back and forth, my encouragement would be to move this back to rules. Is my council open to that by consensus? I'm looking for head nods. Is there any? Almost getting most head nods, but yeah, just, I'm going to let you punch in, Councilmember Aguilar. You raised your hand. I just want to make sure that.
Go back to rules and come back to the council for recommendation.
Okay. Do I have a second on that motion? Just punch second. In. Councilmember Bolt, second. Is that you? Okay. Is there any further discussion on sending it back to rules? Councilmember Simon, punch in, please.
My concern is some of these items I did bring to rules, yet they don't come to council.
What are you referring to in particular?
The urgency item. We had a pretty healthy discussion on that in rules, and it did not come back to council as presented in the presentation, or for us really to discuss as council. The vice mayor, same issue. So if it does go back to rules, the dilemma is the council doesn't see the language that I'm proposing or that is discussed. That's the dilemma. That's why we're here today with this. And that's why I think this should come back to council, so we can all have input and decide, not just on what two people in the rules committee decide.
Thank you. Any other further discussion on the motion that's been seconded? Okay, on a motion by Councilmember Aguilar with a second from Councilmember Bolt, we are moving this back to rules, subject to your vote. Please vote. This is to move it back to rules.
All votes are in. Motion passes 6-1 with Councilmember Simon voting no.
Okay, at this point in time, we're going to go to item number 11. Do we have item 11s? There are no item 11s that have been presented to the city manager. Let's move to item number 12, council reports and items of interest to the community. We'll start with Vice Mayor.
Thank you, Mayor. I just wanted to let the community know that my visit to the farmers market will be on May 14th, which is next Wednesday. It was changed, so I just wanted to let anybody who thought it was going to be there this Wednesday know. Appreciate that we recognized ANHPI month today. Today, a report came out from the TAAF, which found that currently in the United States, 25% of people in the U.S. say that Chinese Americans are a threat. It also found that 40% of Americans believe that Asian Americans are more loyal to their countries of origin than the U.S. And so there is a real issue around a sense of belonging and who is welcome here and who is othered. And I bring that up for a few different reasons. That is clearly something that is front and center for many people in our community, and not just the AAPI, ANHPI community. But on Monday, last Monday on the 28th, I attended Advocacy Day for ANHPI, coalition of over 100 different organizations. And I wanted to share a few really important bills that are going through the House right now that I think would be supported by our current legislative platform. But I wanted to share it with the rest of the council because they are things that impact the ANHPI community, which is 38% of the city of San Leandro. But more broadly, they affect much more of our city, probably the majority of our city. One of the things that I want to mention is AB 1242, which is around language access, and it ensures that public agencies provide translated materials and services in languages spoken by local communities. And if you're unaware, the city of San Leandro is incredibly diverse, especially in the languages we speak. So even at our local middle school, 38 different languages are spoken in their homes. Another issue related to language is AB 683 by Assemblywoman McCullra, and this is specific to residential rental properties and having language requirements. I know that we are having conversations around tenant protections, and this very much falls into how do we ensure that tenants really are able to have voice and are able to stay in their homes as best as they can, but it requires rental agreements to be provided in the same language used to negotiate them and really protecting limited English-speaking tenants. One other thing that has also come up, and I'm getting phone calls about and messages, especially because I am in the schools, is a bill by Murasuchi, AB 49, around safe school zones. And it really is focused on designated schools and daycare centers as safe zones from immigration enforcement to protect immigrant families and students. Obviously, this is a very complicated issue, but I wanted to bring that up because it is definitely something that people in the community, myself included, and I know other council members have been thinking about. I can send these to the council so that they're aware as well. And I would also encourage, if council members, I know Council Member Veris Walton is definitely attuned to a lot of policies that are happening in Sacramento, but if there are bills that you all are in meetings at and hearing about that could impact us in ways that we can apply or advocate for to be able to share with each other so that we can help send letters of support or talk to different organizations. I also wanted to share that last week I also attended the Stop Waste meeting, which was a combined Stop Waste Recycling Board meeting. And one of the things that came out of that, we did a annual report meeting that was really good. But I wanted to share that since January 1st, California has banned the sale and distribution of styrofoam for food serviceware. And it did get into effect January 1, but you'll still see it on the shelves just because CalRecycle is tasked with identifying businesses that are producing, selling, and distributing the products, but it's obviously going to take time, but that's a really great thing for our environment. And then I also just wanted to share that I attended the Human Development Committee, which is a committee that I'm on through the National League of Cities. And we have talked about social safety net programs and Medicaid, Medi-Cal. And one of the biggest discussions on our council we have, and one of the biggest discussions we had was actually around two letters that the human that the National League of Cities and a bipartisan coalition of state and local government organizations, including the NLC, U.S. Conference of Mayors, wrote to our congressional to our congresspeople, was expressing strong concerns over proposed federal changes to Medicaid financing and requirements. The other letter that was sent out was related to SNAP, TNNF, and also social services block grant programs. And so I share all that to say that there are a lot of municipalities that are being impacted by these federal policies in very real ways. And so in the Human Development Committee meeting, we've really kind of trying to figure out how it's impacting people and what municipalities can do. And those two letters are really strong signals that everybody from the local level up to the state legislature are in coalition right now trying to make sure that we have these funds to be able to support our community.
Councilmember Chris Walton.
I last Friday on May 2nd, I attended a Latina Leaders Roundtable held over in Fruitvale. It was organized by the Hispanic Caucus, Latina Futures Lab, and as well as Assembly Members Ortega, Avila Farias, and Bonta. And we talked on issues affecting Latina women and Latina leaders in Northern California. It was a fantastic event and learned a lot. And I'll be putting together a memo because I think there are some issues relating to a lot of priorities that we're working on in the city relating to economic mobility, childcare, access to healthcare, entrepreneurship. And I also wanted to alert folks that next Monday, and actually I'm going to have to come back because I have it in my purse, but I'll come back to that because it's the announcement on the SLEA meeting that's going to start earlier. So let me, I'll pop out of the queue and then pop back in.
Thank you. Councilmember Bolt.
Yes, thank you. I just want to report on a couple of meetings that I attended, participated in for the labor community here in San Leandro and workforce development and bringing in local hire issues to the forefront. We had at one meeting through our MEPS group over at Net Zero IBEW, we had 26 Alameda County elected officials, and we spoke on and we had I think we had five of our own elected at that meeting. So first, thank you all for coming to that. It's important, workers' rights and workers' safety and pay and all that should be at the forefront, especially after last weekend's holiday. And then Friday we had another event with state officials. Again, mayor, vice mayor were there, and it was focused CTWI workforce development, bringing different parts of our community together so that we're creating good legislation that will continue to bolster the middle class here in San Leandro. And so I thank all the council members here at this dais and across Alameda County that have been participating in that. And I look forward to working with us all to make sure San Leandro's on the forefront of these issues when it comes to workers' rights and local hire. Thank you.
Councilmember Aguilar, please.
Thank you, Mayor Gonzalez. On Friday, April 25th, I attended the Equality California Equality Awards, where Gigi Gorgeous was honored for Equality Visibility, and the Ally Leadership Award was awarded to Ivar Sotero, who is a former airport director for San Francisco International Airport. And just to kind of give you a little grasp about what Equality California does, With over 900,000 members, Equality California is the nation's largest statewide LGBTQ plus civil rights organization. And they're California's only LGBTQ civil rights organization working at the local, state, and national levels. Thank you.
Councilmember Vivotis Walton. Nope, that's fine. Perfect. I'll give a quick update that I'll try to group by categories for quality of life. I do want to celebrate staff. We've had a number of quality of life events ranging from Dia de los Niños at the library, wonderful activities, Pochella in Marina Park, sponsored by PD. Thank you for that. Arbor Day tree planting, Rec and Park Department just shining, and then Rec and Park Department again shining at the Cinco de Mayo celebration. Councilmember Vivotis Walton had the opportunity to address the community, so thank you for joining and inviting folks to an event. Then I want to go to just work on attracting businesses to San Leandro. Spent some time around the Earth Day celebrations in the World Economic Forum, meeting with winners of top climate entrepreneurial awards in San Francisco, and spoke with folks that as they scale their ideas, to know that we are a manufacturing city here in San Leandro. In fact, I will be connecting one of those companies with some of the spaces that have industrial openings here in our city. The next piece would be funding. As we pursue funding or looking for ways to get more money for the city, for those that are familiar with the District 6 FEMA insurance challenges and the high prices that people have to pay for flood insurance in District 6, we've got an outstanding project where we are pursuing funding from FEMA to help support the construction of berms and address flood risk along the canal there just in the southern part of District 6. And that's looking very positive. We continue to make progress on that front. Similar, we received a grant from MTC that we're working through some of the details on that will support construction of a roundabout here in the city. Excited to have taken our San Leandro advocate, who advocates for us in Sacramento, Nicolo De Luca, around the city for 2 hours, pointing out different projects. And, you know, he said he had been probably 5 years since he had been in San Leandro. And so the ability to see some of the transformations, we actually went inside of Speedway at Bayfair. And he was like, wow, I just did not even recognize this place, that the transformations that are happening in San Leandro. And for him, it's just, he said, it makes it very real when I advocate, if I know what I'm talking about, because I'm literally speaking from the heart regarding things that I've seen with my own eyes. And then I was excited to join a U.S. Department of Transportation Intergovernmental Affairs meeting where they laid out the funding priorities for the Trump administration. And they were very direct with us. They said, talk about things this way. And I convey that information to city manager to make sure that as we go and are applying for grants, that we're very mindful that we are in a different administration. Funding is still available, but the way that funding will be analyzed and perceived will be in a different way. I am grateful, by the way, Councilmember Bolt, for the invitation with Senator Wahab. I was a keynote speaker at that CTWI gathering. And, you know, the work that CTWI does here in our community specifically and in partnership with the San Leandro Unified School District, I think is very important, and had the opportunity to celebrate that on Friday. The last thing that I'll call out is a future event, encouraging residents, say we continue that celebration diversity in our community. And in particular, we celebrate this coming Friday, the integration of Filipino culture and Mexican culture. Something that I didn't even know was a thing, Mixapino culture. Last year's celebration was quite popular, and one of the most attended events put on by the downtown benefit district. And we as a city provide financial support to that district. So it really is something that's designed for all of San Leandro, and we encourage residents to come out and to celebrate. So with that, we have reached the hour of 9:54, and we are adjourned.